You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Standifer, and as always, I'm your host. And today with me, I have Jake. And Jake's going to be talking to us about common misconceptions that a lot of people end up having about banking. It's going to be largely tied to things like personal accounts, checking accounts, debit cards, things like that. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the frequently asked questions that we've talked about on previous episodes, but maybe in the other direction, whereas, you know, the frequently asked questions are things people feel less confident about. This is something that maybe people feel confident about, but unfortunately are incorrect in their confidence. So we're hoping to give a little bit of advice and guidance and help maybe avoid some pain points that people run into with these misconceptions. So Jake, it's awesome to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do here at the bank.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. My name is Jake Stark. I work in our customer service department as one of our customer service representatives. So if you ever give us a call on the phone or send us a message through our online banking, I'm one of three people on our team that'll be answering you.
Yeah. And you talk to people all day, every workday, basically helping them with their questions or maybe unfortunately something they thought was working one way. So he's going to be a really good resource for us, having his experience doing what he has done at the bank. Let's just get right into it here, talking about common misconceptions that people have, you know, areas of frustration, unfortunately, that end up arising from people maybe thinking their accounts work one way or their debit cards work one way, when they don't actually. So we're actually going to start talking about debit cards because they're very simple, but also at the same time, they can get pretty complicated. One of the things that each debit card has, and we have specifically here as well, are ATM limits or point of sale limits. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's something that I know people kind of forget about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So our standard limits on our card, it all depends on the person and how they set up their card. So basically when you come in, you open that debit card for the first time. A lot of people have had their debit card for a long time, so they forget that they have these limits. For security purposes, we do have those for our customers' benefits. And generally, they would be $500 for an ATM limit and then $1,500 for a point of sale limit.
Yeah. And that's a daily limit, correct?
Yes. Yep. That would be a daily thing that. And we can always raise those to whatever our customers' needs may fit.
Yeah, if they need to make a large purchase or something.
Correct, yeah.
And that's very industry standard. Almost every bank will do this. Credit cards don't work the exact same way because you're working with lines of credit. But the reason those exist is because if someone got your debit card, you know, say I took Jake's card and went to Best Buy, and then, you know, I just wanted to buy TV after TV, without that limit, I could run up a bunch of fraudulent charges on Jake's card without him really getting the chance to do anything about it. So it's really a security thing there for both the bank and the customer, so that if someone unfortunately does get a hold of someone's debit card or debit card number, that it puts a stop on how much damage they can do in a day, really, before, you know, you can do some of that damage control.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. So the other thing is it's a really quick process if you ever do need to get those limits raised. Mm-hmm. So if you know you're going to be out at the store or you're going to be shopping or you want to go out and take some money out, all you got to do is give us a call, send us a message to that online banking, and we're very responsive through either platform that you'll be able to get that raised up right away.
Yeah. Or if you're planning on making a big purchase like on the weekend, probably call ahead to your bank and make sure that you get that raised beforehand. Because if it's like a Sunday afternoon, probably not going to be anyone working at your bank. Most banks don't have staffing during that. Also, if your debit card gets declined at a store or gas station or whatever, that doesn't always mean you don't have any money. That's a really common reason that debit cards get declined is that, you've just exceeded the daily limit.
Correct. Yeah, we see that. We do see that a lot. We see it through several reasons. But yeah, that limit being exceeded is something that always does come up.
Yeah, and another one that we run into sometimes is gas pumps. You know, people go to the gas pump and they swipe their card and it declines them, even though they have some money in their account. Can you talk a little bit about why that happens and how the gas pumps work?
Yeah, no. So we've noticed a lot now with gas pumps, they'll have a limit on their card or on the card, on the pump. Itself.
Yeah. Yep.
So with the limits on the pump, they'll only allow you to put so much in. So if your car, they'll run it for say $100. So if they run it for $100 at the pump, you don't have $100 in the account, it'll automatically decline it.
Yeah. So like if you only wanted to put $30 in your car, but you only have $50 on your in your checking mm-hmm. account, like Jake was saying, the way that pump works is it charges your card for the full limit that it would let you fill. Because when you're at the pump, I'm sure you've noticed, it just lets you keep going until you're done pumping. Well, there's technically actually a limit that it'll let you pump, and some people who have like semi trucks or really big trucks maybe have run into this before pumping large amounts of gas, but it'll basically charge your card for the full amount that you could do in one go. And then when you're done pumping and you hang it back up, it reverses that charge and ends up only charging you for the amount that you actually filled for. So yeah, like you're saying, if you, swipe it and you don't have enough in there, it might decline it.
Correct.
Even though you're only planning on filling $15 of gas, it's going to try charging for that whole 100 right away.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And a nice easy way to avoid that too is if you go right inside to a pump and say, hey, I want $10 on, pump two, that'll mm-hmm. go right onto your card. It'll charge your card $10 right away, and there won't be any issues in that instance.
Yeah. Cause they just charge that at the register rather correct. Than that, the way they do it at the pump. Yeah.
Correct.
And then, another thing that people kind of run into is specifically with hotels and restaurants, a couple different situations with what's called pre-authorizations or kind of late charges being added if you're like somewhere where you tip. So these are kind of two different situations. So can you talk a little bit about how restaurants often do this when you're like somewhere where you're going to put a tip or a bar or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, with those pre-authorizations, you'll see those come through. That'll be the initial charge that mm-hmm. your food costed at a restaurant, but then you'll write that tip on there. So those businesses, they have within 5 business days to add that tip on there and finalize that transaction. So when you leave a tip, you may not see that full amount right away. So you always got to be mindful in the back of your head, hey, this was only charged to my account at this time. The tip will still come through for whatever I left for them.
Mm-hmm. And with hotels, it's kind of different in a similar way where, they may have like a hold on your card or something like that. Can you talk?
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about that. With hotels and places like that, camping resorts, any of those types of things, they'll put usually a security deposit. So mm-hmm. if any accidental charges happen to the room while you're in there, they'll put this kind of a temporary hold on there to make sure that's covered.
You can pay for it.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. So we see a lot of customers, they'll run into that sometimes where they have the pre-authorization come through and then another charge come through and they feel as though the charge has come through twice, but really the second one will fall off.
Yeah. It just sometimes takes, 5 to 7 business days depending correct. On the, and it's sometimes longer depending on the circumstance, but, that is very common. Yeah. With hotels too. And kind of hand in hand with debit cards, but you can use your regular account for this too. Signing up for free trials. I know this is something I ran into a lot when I was a personal banker too, talking to customers who are confused because they sign up for a free trial, but they never, they didn't think they signed up for the full product, whether it's like Netflix or Spotify or anything, even the big ones. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to a little bit about how free trials work and, what that means for you as a customer if you don't take action before that trial ends?
Yeah, so absolutely. With free trials, it's always in the fine print of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Usually with a free trial, it'll say, hey, you'll get a week free of this membership. And then you have to read further into it. And then it'll say, if you don't cancel by this day, the full amount will be charged. A lot of times with free trials, you'll see 99 cents to try this product and then not realize that if you don't cancel it after the trial period, it'll be a $100 charge. And then unfortunately, in that instance, that would be what's called a merchant dispute that you would have to handle,
mm-hmm.
where because you authorized the transaction, because you signed up for the trial, you would have to work directly with the merchant in that instance to try to get that money refunded and that full account canceled.
Yeah. So oftentimes, since you have to put in a debit card when you sign up for the trial, they do that so they can charge you when the trial's over. And yeah, unfortunately, we don't have at the bank, or Jake as the customer service representative, he doesn't have the power to dispute with that company directly because you did give them the authorization, unfortunately, to draw that money, because like Jake said, it's in the fine print. So you do need to be mindful with those free trials. If you don't want it, you got to make sure you cancel it early. And you can still try a merchant dispute, like Jake said, but they don't always work, right? Like,
well, yeah. So with those merchant disputes, sometimes the company will say, I'm sorry, we can't do anything. And in that instance, unfortunately, you would be out of luck, so to speak. However, if you do say you do cancel the trial in the membership, you know, in that free period, and they still charged you, you could always come to us with that proof of cancellation, mm-hmm. and we can certainly move forward with a regular dispute from there, saying we have this, you know, proof that you canceled prior to the date authorized, and then we can go forward with a regular dispute on our end of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so talk a little bit more about disputes. We've already mentioned them a little bit, like what is a transaction dispute, and what kind of situations are you allowed to dispute, and what kind of resolutions are there for a customer?
Yeah, so, I mean, we are always going to take your dispute if you say you didn't do something.
Yeah.
And it's unauthorizedly coming out of your account. However, there is an, so to speak, an investigation period that goes on. So you'll let us know, you know, what the transaction was, give us as much details as you can about it. And then from there, what we do is we create a dispute form where we work with our internal team, and then they work with Visa directly. And then from there, Visa investigates the transaction with the company itself and then comes back to us with a resolution. Mm-hmm. So you can dispute, you know, say you didn't receive something in the mail that you ordered, something, you know, you didn't have your card itself and there were charges that came out. Mm-hmm. Those are usually very clear cut and dry situations as to where the dispute will come back in your favor, as you truly didn't do the transaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I know sometimes there are ones where it can be a little tougher when a merchant's being hard to work with for Visa and stuff like that. So sometimes it does take a little while for it to resolve as well. But yeah, if you ever have a situation where you know, obviously, like if your debit card got charged in Kentucky and you live in Washington and it was charged at a Walmart out in Kentucky, yeah, that probably wasn't you. And that's usually a pretty clear and fast resolution.
Correct. Another thing that we do see a lot of people seeing is now with there being an ever online world, we'll see a lot of companies. Amazon is based out of Washington. Walmart.com is based out of Arkansas. Uber is based out of California. They'll see these charges coming through from Arkansas, California, Washington, and they'll think that there's fraud coming through on their card. So it's always nice to look at your transactions themselves and then, you know,
see if it makes sense to stuff that you've
correct,
done.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the merchant. The location isn't always 100% to where you may be shopping from with the online. That is true. That's a good thing to keep in mind as well. And speaking of online banking, you know, it is a great tool to look at these things, to follow your transactions, to make, you know, do transfers. You could even open accounts. Lots of great stuff with the digital banking nowadays. There's also some features that people, you know, end up using regularly and maybe end up relying on a little too much. You know, can you speak to a little bit about what those may be and maybe like a healthy way to balance using your online banking, but not, you know, depending on it to do stuff for you, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the online banking itself, like Timmy said, is a very, very useful tool to have. Mm-hmm. You can get updates as transactions come through on your accounts. You can also set any kind of notices on those online bankings mm-hmm. nowadays, where you could set if a large item is coming out, any item itself is coming out, or if you overdraft your account, you can set notices that those kinds of things happen. However, it is still your responsibility to look into those transactions and make the proper transfers if you need to cover those kinds of things that may occur.
Yeah. And, you know, there may be times where, unfortunately, there's some technical issues with the online banking or even maybe your phone or your cell phone service or something, and you may not get that notice right away. And so that, again, is, you know, your responsibility as the customer. Just because that notice didn't come through to you that you had set up, it unfortunately doesn't mean it's not your responsibility still to take care of that and keep track of your own money on your own. That it's a, you know, it's a great tool, online banking, but you don't want it to necessarily be a crutch where you're being irresponsible and not, you know, watching where your what your transactions are and keeping track of your own money. Because yeah, like you said, if you set up a notice for an overdraft or a low balance or something like that, and that notice didn't come through because, yeah, like I said, maybe a technical reason or something, is still your responsibility as the customer if you overdraft the account. It's not the bank's responsibility then because there was a technical issue with your app, which is unfortunately something we've run into a few times. And I'm sure many people have run into that with different apps of all sorts that they have. You know, as a consumer who uses different types of technology and apps, is they can have technical issues where it doesn't go through, and it's still your responsibility as an individual, regardless of how that app is responding at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always, in my opinion, the best to just keep an eye on your money, know what you're spending, know where you're spending it. And if you do notice you're starting to get low, to keep a little extra eye on it.
Yeah. And you can always obviously still keep a checkbook or run a balance. That's still a responsible thing to do. As useful as online banking is, same with any other tool that you have, it's still on you to check in on it manually. You know, the automated stuff is all nice, but you still got to keep your eyes on it. Let's talk a little bit about checking accounts and how they work, really. It's simple enough to think about, but people don't always know what a checking account is and what you have to have and how it works and what you can and can't do with it.
Yeah, no.
Same with a savings account, even, like what you can and can't do with those. Yeah,
correct. So, with checking accounts, they have the word check in it. However, you don't need to have checks to have a checking account.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a debit card, which works in the same capacity as checks. With the world ever evolving a little more into the electronic world, you'll see the use of debit cards to become more convenient, but checks are still accepted in most places, so you can still feel free to use those.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have either, right?
You don't have to have either to use it. You can have a checking or a savings account that you just get deposits in, take money out if you come and see us at the banks.
Mm-hmm. And then the savings account, talk to us a little bit about how that works and what it can and can't do.
Yeah, so a savings account, it can have a debit card, it can have an ATM card, so you can still withdraw funds out of those accounts.
But I know that can be a point of confusion for some people where they have the card and it works at the ATM, but it doesn't work at a store. So, if you do have an ATM card versus a debit card, it's important to know the difference on what it can and can't do. And it still has the same limits.
Correct.
You know, the ATM limits we talked about before.
Those still have limits. Those still exist.
Mm-hmm.
Our savings account also pays a little interest to you, so you get that back as well.
Yeah. So, and you also, out of both of them, can pay things electronically, like almost all every credit card and, most of your services, like your phone bill and electronics, or your electric bill and stuff like that. You can pay almost all of that online using a account routing number through an electronic payment. And you can do that out of either accounts too.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do it out of one versus the other. There used to be some regulations on how many electronic transactions savings accounts could do, but those have been lifted in recent years, actually.
Yeah, and in the past 2 years, those have been lifted off of there. So the savings and the checking accounts can now both have those with no restrictions currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they can both receive electronic payments. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm just going to talk a little bit about some lending stuff. I was a lender for a while here and, still, have my NMLS and everything, so I can speak to a little bit about this. But in my experience, since lending has changed so much over the years, something that I ran into quite a bit with working with customers is the assumption that if you have a piece of collateral worth plenty of money, that should make up for maybe any other issues with underwriting. Like maybe you don't make quite enough money, or maybe you have slightly worse credit or something. And unfortunately, it doesn't really work that way. Really the way underwriting works is you have different parameters, like how much the income versus your debt is, the debt to income ratio. You have your collateral value and your credit score. And unfortunately, if one is weaker or multiple is weaker, they don't really make up for each other necessarily. So I've ran into that a lot with, maybe someone has like $1 million property that's all paid off, but they don't make any money right now. They're not working, which is totally fine. But if you want a loan, unfortunately, we do need to look at your active income, because how are you going to make that monthly payment? But in some people's minds, the value of that property should be enough of a reason for us to do the loan. And unfortunately, that's not how the guidelines are written by the federal lending entities and, you know, like the fair lending guidelines that dictate how we have to make decisions and exceptions, and it gets very complicated. And also, unfortunately, having a long deposit history doesn't automatically make you, you know, qualified for a loan too. Yes, I mean, it's great to see that you have been a reliable customer and maybe you have had loans in the past, but we do have to look at everyone equally and consider everyone on the same playing field, really. You know, and it may be a good encouraging thing to see that, but it we still have to look at everyone's applications with the same parameters. And also your age has no effect on your loan too. That's something that I've ran into a lot, where maybe some older people think, well, are you going to lend to me because I'm older? Well, of course. You know, your age has nothing to do with your eligibility. We encourage anyone who's 18 or older to apply if you think you might want a loan. Equal Credit Opportunity Act, make sure that institutions are lending to everyone of each age and group equally. That's the point of all of those regulations. You know, you may have different income at different points in your life, but your age itself has no bearing on your eligibility for a loan. So yeah, that was just some quick fire stuff about mortgages, and maybe I've touched on it on different episodes, but yeah, I'm just going to kind of summarize some of the stuff we talked about. It's a little bit of an interesting one. I don't have any do's and don'ts just because we're kind of looking at so many different things. We've talked about a broad spectrum of different products and banking things. And I think just the main summary to me is, you know, ask questions and be diligent on your finances. I think that's obviously an overarching theme in every episode we have, but the more diligent you are and the more questions you ask, the less problems you're going to have. Like if you signed up for a free trial for something and you didn't realize that you were going to get charged because maybe you didn't read the fine print, unfortunately, you're going to get charged for that and there might not be a way to get that money back. Whereas if you ask your banker when you're signing up, like, hey, I signed up for this free trial, how should I cancel this? You can get some guidance on how to handle it properly, and then you're not stuck trying to deal with stuff after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, myself and my team are always there for any of our customers that have a question or ever need to ask. So if you do have a question or anything you need, just feel free to give us a call or a message.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any closing thoughts besides that, or anything you want to touch on that maybe we didn't touch on?
Nothing too crazy. Another thing that I did think of off the top of my head was a lot of people will pay things electronically through other apps, PayPal, Venmo, Zelle. Those other things can all be accessed through your debit cards, through your accounts. You can link your accounts up with those things. So that's just another way that people can connect with a checking account, savings account, debit card. The limits of all your stuff do adhere, but they are, you know, other things. A common misconception, though, is we don't own those other companies.
Yeah. So, like, if you made a PayPal transaction and there was something wrong with the purchase, you should go to PayPal. I mean, we can help give you some guidance, but they're going to be the ones that reconcile the issue ultimately.
Correct. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe there is a situation where we have to do a dispute or something, but when third party merchant services are involved, they're the ones handling the purchase and transaction. So, they, you know, it's also another level of security sometimes, though, too, when you're doing online transactions, because they know the realm they're operating in. So they know they need to have good, you know, resolutions to issues or fraud or things like that. So, but yeah, it was awesome to have you on and
thank you.
Just kind of go through a whole wide array of different things. And we thank everyone for watching and listening. And we encourage you, if you have any questions or comments or feedback, anything, you know, maybe if you have something you think you might know how it works, but you're not sure and you have a question on it, you can definitely ask us that as well. Send any of this stuff to me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's HEYTIMMY @amindformoney.com. And with that, we thank you for watching and listening and hope you have a great rest of your day.